that talks about the fruit of the Spirit in Galatians chapter 5, verses 16 to 25 or so. And this is what Paul had to say to remind the Galatians of the work of the Spirit. So I say, live by the Spirit, and you will not gratify the desires of the sinful nature. For the sinful nature desires what is contrary to the Spirit, and the Spirit what is contrary to the sinful nature. And they're in conflict with each other, so that you do not do what you want to do. I think all of us are familiar with that struggle. But if you are led by the Spirit, you are not under the law. The acts of the sinful nature are obvious. Sexual immorality, impurity, debauchery, idolatry, witchcraft, hatred, discord, jealousy, fits of rage, selfish ambition, dissensions, factions, and envy, drunkenness, orgies, and the like. I warn you, as I did before, that those who live like this will not inherit the kingdom of God. But the fruit of the Spirit, the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. Now, Barry, you're an officer of the law. Can you tell me, is there anything unlawful about being patient? Is there a law against that? Is there a law against kindness? Is there a law against faithfulness? Is there a law against loving others? Well, that's exactly what Paul said, too. He said, against such things there is no law, because these things are productive. These are good things. These things help us individually. They help us as a society. Now, some of these things can get us into trouble. If we live for peace, that's not to say that things are going to be easy. Sometimes those things can get us into trouble, but they're good things. They're not against the law. Those who belong to Christ have crucified the sinful nature with its passions and desires. Since we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit. So the fruit of the Spirit is actually the product of Christ being formed within us. The fruit of the Spirit is God's character shining through us. That's what it's all about. And we've been learning about the fruit of the Spirit. We've been learning that God grows the fruit in season on healthy trees. And this morning what we'd like to do is kind of take this out of the textbook and into real life. And so we've asked three people from our family if they would come up and open themselves up to us a little bit and share some of their experience. So I'm going to invite Rhoda Bowman to come on up, and David Arsenal, and Matthew Dom. Matthew here? So come on up and have a place on one of these seats. Welcome. Rhoda, how long have you been part of this fellowship?
Well, actually, since 1984. The church was established January 1984, and my husband and I got married in August 84, and we started coming here in October 84.
And what do you do when you're not involved in the life and worship of Country Hills here?
I've always prioritized, number one, I'm a wife and I'm a mom, and above that, I'm a child of God. And it seems like the other moments and times of the day, I've worked at home, but also outside the home. I do sales and marketing for a local manufacturing company and work full-time there, and I also volunteer several hours a week.
And Dave, how long have you been part of this family?
We've been part of Country Hill since 2002, so we're going on 13 years.
And what do you do when you're not, what do you do for a living?
Full-time father. Okay. Three girls on my hands, so it's great. I enjoy it. I don't I love every moment of it, so that way. And I also work, I'm fortunate enough to work for the city of Kitchener, so.
And Matt, how long have you been part of our family?
For 8 years, I think.
And Matt, what do you do for a living?
Well, I'm the CEO of NFI. I go to school and normal kid stuff.
And are you at all nervous this morning?
Very.
We'll give you a moment or two to get settled down then. I'll start picking on Rhoda down at this end. We want to ask these folks where they've encountered the character of God, the fruit of the Spirit, either in their own lives or in their interaction with other people. And Rhoda, one other question just before I ask you that. What's your favorite thing to do on a sunny Sunday afternoon, not unlike today?
Hiking, hands down. And the better would be to be hiking with someone else. My hobby is walk talks. I love going for a walk and a talk with someone. What was the next question?
So can you tell us a little bit about your experience in encountering the character of God, the fruit of the Spirit, in your own life, or maybe in interactions that you've had as you've walked with others?
Well, that's a big topic. I think if I was to put it in a nutshell, for me, the fruit of the Spirit is something that happens when I depend on Jesus in me. And if I could dial back the years to when I first really started to learn about how this looks and how it feels in real life, would be when I was a young mom. I had three kids. I remember when they would be approximately 5, 8, and 11. And I got sandwiched between an older generation and my young family. And in a moment when it was very frustrating to meet everybody's needs and get everything done. And for me, I was also learning about what it looked like to depend on Jesus. I had been reading books. I was taking a course at a local discipleship and training center, and God was really doing something in me. I remember one day, summertime, August, getting ready for family vacation. So much to do, and not enough time to do it in. Phone rings, mother-in-law asks, can you take me on an errand? Something that was important for her. And I'm thinking, no! I have so much to do, I can't fit it in. And yet I saw the big picture and it's like, okay. So I remember going up the stairwell in her condo. This isn't about my mother-in-law, by the way. This is about me and my impatience. And throwing my keys down on the floor of the landing in out of frustration, thinking, I don't have time for this. And so filled with impatience and frustration. And God so clearly met me in my head and my heart. And he says, what's this all about? And for me, it was like, okay, I guess I need to just realize I'm at the end of my patience. I don't have any more. I would rather not do this. And I remember surrendering and saying, all right, I get it. I'm supposed to depend on you. So when my patience is gone and it's not there anymore, I need your patience to fill me and respond to my mother-in-law in a way that she knows I love her. And I did. And I did. And this surrendering and not being impatient anymore and entering into what I had to do. And I took her where she needed to go. And as it turned out, it was very close to her end of days here on earth. And for her, it was a big thing. For me, I only saw that in hindsight afterwards. So that was really the beginning of learning to surrender and acknowledge that my resources were very, very limited, and especially in a situation like that when I felt very sandwiched, and to learn to draw from Christ within to supply what I need. And then henceforth, there's been so many things I could say whether it was in my volunteering, not knowing the words to say, not knowing how to meet that person in their situation, not knowing how to connect, and then trusting and depending for Jesus in me to do all that that I didn't have. And again, there was words that were given. And this isn't about me, because my resources were not there to do it. And he shows up, and he knows how to respond to them. So for me, Gavin, fruit wasn't something that I look at and kind of go after as a performance thing, like, look at me, I got some good fruit on me. It was something that I was kind of oblivious about, and I still am. And actually, I prefer that to be the case. I don't really need to see the big picture. I love that John 14 example of us being a vine. And the road, a branch of the Jesus vine, is what I hope you see this morning. And I would call all of you to be branches on the Jesus vine and to draw everything you need from him. And he's the one that makes the fruit. But I can't not say how the master gardener, our Heavenly Father, sometimes comes along and prunes you. And oh my goodness, that isn't fun. It's not fun at all. And there's stuff that's lopped off and it falls and you think, hey, that was a good looking little twig there. And it's gone and it won't come back. And yet we have no idea what he's going to grow on our branch in terms of fruit. So I've experienced the fruit from other people. Some are sitting here this morning, and you know who you are, that has given me kindness and gentleness and words of wisdom in my moment of maybe pruning or whatever. And I also have experienced the joy of also being fruit for someone else that needed kindness and gentleness and peace. And the cool thing is, that's not just me. That's all of us that belong to this Jesus vine. So.
That's very interesting, Rhoda. Thank you for telling us a little bit about your experience. I think it's interesting that you talk about not trying, but when you come to the end of yourself, God would show up repeatedly and do for you what wasn't coming naturally for yourself. In some of those situations, how do you think, like that situation with your mother-in-law, for example, what if you had ignored that voice? How do you think that story might have turned out differently?
I probably never would have had the connection with her. I probably never would have had the connection with her otherwise, because later on she opened up to me and to my husband, and we had just an amazing connection with her towards the end of her life. If that day I would have just sort of said, you know, I don't have time for you, like, go get it done some other way, the relationship would have been really impacted in a bad way. And I know that I would have crushed her, but that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to just not be there. I didn't want it at all. And yet surrendering was kind of like not planting the seed of impatience, but planting the seed of patience that continued to grow in the relationship and accomplished some pretty cool stuff that really did need to happen. I don't know if that answers your question, but that's how it felt.
If this is working, I want to pass the microphone on down to Dave. And Dave, before you get into your story, I want to ask you another question. You might think it's frivolous, but how would you finish this statement? I'd rather be think about what you're doing right now. I'd rather be
no place else.
No place else. That is a great answer. Yeah. That is a fantastic answer. So tell us a little bit about your experience in encountering the fruit of the Spirit, the character of God, in your own life, maybe as you've interacted with other people.
I've got cheat sheets, so I wanted to make sure I kept on track. I can't talk about the fruit of the Spirit unless I talk about the pruning in my own life. And in February 2011, we started a huge journey in our family, a huge pruning. We watched, I guess, a video last week where a lady just chopped the piece of the trunk right off of the tree, and that happened to our family. And the pruning wasn't only happening in my life, but I think our whole family's lives. And I started in February with some intense intestinal problems, and it progressed and it got worse. And in April 2011, I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. And at the age of 40, that's a very rare thing, because it's considered a young person's disease between the ages of 15 and 35. And it came out of nowhere, and it just, my body attacked itself, and it was devastating. I spent a week in the hospital, and they started me on some meds, and it seemed that things were getting better. And at that point, we had thought that the worst was behind us, and it wasn't. We ended up going on a ton of harsh meds and progressing into stronger medicine until we came to the point where I had to receive Remicade. And Remicade is a very harsh drug that controls a lot of the controls autoimmune disease. And at that point, I was looking at intravenous drug for about every 6 weeks for 2 hours. And the drugs had tons of side effects, but it was the only way to move towards. When I got on the Remicade, things looked positive. Things were starting to change in my body, and I was starting to get some normalcy back. But then it began to fail again. And at that point, again, when the Remicade was working, we thought the worst was behind us, but it wasn't. There was still some more pruning to be done. As the Remicade failed, in early September, my GI called me and said it was time to have surgery. And with this surgery, because the ulcerative colitis had ravaged my colon so badly, we were looking at a six-hour surgery to remove my entire colon. For a 41-year-old man, that was something. My life was going to change. The positive thing about the surgery was that the pain was going to go away. There was options to the surgery. I had my colon removed, but at the same time, I had an option of a reversal, which included a J-loop of my small intestine, which meant I didn't have to deal with a colostomy bag for the rest of my life. And that would have been a tough task. So I decided to go ahead and go for it and see what would happen. It was a six-hour surgery, I believe, and everything went well. The surgery was successful. I was on the road to recovery, and at that point, we thought the worst was behind us. It was about 6 weeks after the surgery, and things were getting worse. And for me, it was very confusing, and it tested my patience at this time, because I had already been through 6 months of just entire pain and craziness that I thought, this was it. We're doing well. We're going to recover, and things will get better. And it didn't. I suffered a couple blockages, which landed me in the hospital again for a few more days, which caused probably the most pain I've ever had in my whole life. And I thought the pain was over. I was frustrated. I was angry. I was disappointed. I had lost over 60 pounds. I couldn't climb 3 steps without sitting down. My mental well-being was tested. And having to deal with a colostomy bag, and just watching my family. Near the end of October was some of the worst days of my life, because I thought I was done. A lot of people had looked around, and I was fighting every day to get through the next day. And everybody was looking at me like, this man is dying. And I didn't see that. I just saw God's love, grace, and fighting every day to make it through. I finally received the help that I needed. I got some medicine that allowed me to regain energy. And within 2 days, I had already gained 3 pounds back, which was remarkable for me at that time. I was like, yay, here we go. And I knew at that point that I had turned the corner, that God was ready to intervene, that he had stripped me down to what I needed to be, and that it was time to grow some fruit from that. So, on November 17th, I got to go ahead to have my second surgery, and that was exciting because it was probably the most worrisome time because we had to make sure that the reversal was going to take, and that meant that everything inside me had healed properly so that I wouldn't have to deal with a colostomy bag. And so when I got that news, at that point I had probably gained about 10 pounds and I was getting all my energy back and I was strong enough to have my second surgery, and so I was so grateful and praise God for that. So in the early December we had my second surgery, early December, and then after that things started to change and we started getting back to normalcy. It was a good recovery and I started getting my life back. And God was now ready to grow his fruit, as I would say. And as I wrote that line, I had realized that God was growing his fruit all the time during this whole process, because I'm not just one plant, I'm part of a vine. And during that whole process, there were tons of people who were showing the fruit in their love and everything else in the church to support our family. There were a lot of growing times, there were a lot of teaching times, there were a lot of difficult times, but it was a great time for the church and for our family. Once everything settled down in January, we were able to sit down and look at what had happened in the past year, and it was almost 12 months, and it was time to almost take inventory as to what had happened. And some of the fruit that it did show, I want to share with you today. I mean, there's so much more to my story, but I just don't want to take so much time. With Sarah, the fruit, I mean, she was a rock through it all. I mean, if anyone knows Sarah, she is an unbelievable woman. She kept the family together during this time, and if you're a mother or even a single mother, you understand the hard work that it is, but she was a single mother for almost 10 months as I laid on my back and couldn't move. And she held the family together and tried to maintain some normalcy in my children's lives, which was so important to me. My children are my everything, so thank you for that. She strengthened her relationship with God during this time, and I think that was really important for our family. She was always willing to give of her time, regardless of what was going on. She always gave her love, and she always gave her energy. Anyone knows her knows that she will jump over a bridge for you. She will do anything for you. So I want to say that about Sarah. When I asked Emmy about what she learned during this time, she said she learned to trust God's plan. And trust, I think, is such an important thing in our lives, to trust that God has a plan for anything, no matter what happens, no matter how hard things are, that God has a plan for everything. And she's always been kind, and she's always been generous, and that's what I love about you. You're a fantastic woman. So, Tori is my middle child, and I asked her, and she said she learned to remain positive. And that's insane, because during that time, how can you remain positive when you see your dad dwindling away? She said she learned to turn to God when things are tough. She learned to be patient. And when I asked her about that, she said, I have to be patient because God will do what he needs to do. And I don't know what the plan is there, but I need to be patient to understand what that is. Then I asked Noelle. And Noelle is, she's my firecracker, and she keeps me alive. And she said, I learned that pain is bad, but that God can take away pain if you pray. And how innocent is that? I mean, prayer is central to everything. Prayer is so important, and she understood that. For me, I had to remain faithful and surrender to God's plan. And that meant being patient. And remarkably, through this whole ordeal, I was patient. I remained calm. I didn't get desperate. I would say I only got desperate probably 8 months in, when things really turned for the worse. But for the most part, I trusted that there was a plan here, and that no matter what, God had something going on. During that time, I prayed for my health. But even while in the hospital, I prayed for others who were with me that were, I felt, suffering more than I was, and which was remarkable. I couldn't believe I even was thinking that. There were people that were dying around me. There were people that were suffering more than me. And I came to realize that what I'm going through even though it was bad for me, there were other things worse in the world going on, and that I needed to take it and learn from it. When I say that the fruit was growing regardless of the pruning that was going on, I meant the church family. There was tons of fruit in the vine growing at that time, and it was beautiful fruit. And I want to thank a lot of the members of the congregation who helped us out during that time, specifically my small group. At that time, they gave us a lot of support. I specifically remember the men coming over to my house. I'll never forget it. It'll be ingrained into my mind for the rest of my life when they came over and shared communion with me during a time when it was becoming difficult. And those men don't realize how important that moment was, but thank you. They offered prayer. They offered support. They offered meals during that time. And in the end, when we decided to look at what happened in the past, there was a learning curve, and we taught each other what it is to love as a family, some of the things that we could have done better, some of the things that we did great, and how to improve on that, and if situations arise within our church family, how can we be part of that to make sure, ensure that those people are loved and taken care of. For the church who shared in my journey, and many of you shared in my journey, many of you saw what I was going through, and you always supported me, you always supported the family. I had tons of visits from friends and family, and that includes members of the church. I had friends from nurses who took the time to visit me from this church and even give me an extra pudding when I needed it. To the person who would insist on coming over and visiting me even though I didn't need a visitor at the time, would come over and pray for me and visit with me and spend time with me, thank you. To the pastor who came at 6 a.m. before both surgeries, I was flabbergasted. I mean, my surgery, I had to check in for 6:30 in the morning, and he was there before I even came. And to me, that is just leadership and strength. And I know Pastor Jeremy's not here today, but I just wanted to thank him for that because that was very important. In closing, a mentor once told me that he was disappointed that a miracle never happened for me, and he was sure that I was going to be healed. Yet another mentor had told me that I was a walking miracle and that I am a constant reminder of God's love and faithfulness. As I look at my family, I know God is good. Thank you.
So hold on to the microphone there for a moment, if you would. I thank you for sharing that story with us. You shared just at the end about two mentors, one who was hoping for a miracle and the other one that thought you were a walking miracle. Which of those are you going with? Which would you say experience?
Both were an impact, actually. When the first one said he was looking for a miracle and he thought it would happen, and I knew what his miracle was, that I would have complete healing without the surgery, I thought to myself, and I even said to him, I said, God performed a miracle in a different way. He did it through the doctors. He did it through other means. And when looking back on it, I mean, I live a different lifestyle without a colon, but I'm not on medicine. I'm not in pain. I don't have to worry about those things. As for the second one, again, it's a shock. When someone tells you that you're a walking miracle, it kind of humbles you. And it kind of makes you stand up and say, you're right, God did some wonderful things here, and that people are looking at me in a different light and maybe look at me as an example of God's love and grace. So,
I think it's interesting, too. You mentioned that when you were in the midst of that pain in the hospital, you were looking at the suffering of others and your eyes weren't fixed on yourself. How do you think that helped you cope with?
I found it strange, actually, that I was focused on that. I think there was, during times, there was a sense of loneliness in the hospital because hospitals can be very lonely. And then you try to focus on things that are positive in your life and things that are going on. And when I realized what was going on with other members and other people in my room and trying to figure out what was going on, it was, I realized that some of them were in worse condition than me. I actually had a patient die in my room, and I didn't have the strength to get up and sit beside him and pray with him, so I had to sit in my bed and pray with him, and nobody knew what was going on, and I remember the nurse walking in, and I said, I think he had passed away, and she was devastated that I had to deal with that in the first place, and that she wasn't there at that time, because he was alone, he was by himself, and I looked at his situation thinking, I had my family, my friends, my church, but I had God. And God was always with me, but I didn't know if God was with him. And so the prayers started there in the first time I was there. When I went into the hospital for the second and third time, then prayer just became something normal for the people that were around me. And there were a lot of bitter and angry people, and there were a lot of... I pray for the nurses, too, because they go through a tough, tough ordeal. So it didn't become about me anymore. It became about the people that were around me and suffering. And I tried to focus my thoughts on them. And I knew that I needed prayer for myself, but I depended on other people to do that for me, and I prayed for other people in the hospital while I was there.
Thanks, Dave. Let me give the microphone to Matt there, our CEO of whatever. Matt, before you get too deeply into your story, I'm wondering if you had to be a Marvel superhero,
Wolverine.
Which one would you choose?
Wolverine.
Wolverine, and why is that?
Because he's awesome.
Just because he's awesome. And so are you. Not as awesome as Wolverine. Well, tell us a little bit about your experience of encountering the character of God, the fruit of the Spirit, in your own life, maybe in the lives of people that you interact with.
In my own life, when I was in grade 6, my grandma passed away, and then a month later, my parents got divorced, and it wasn't so much as a moment of pruning, but it was so much like I didn't have that tree to prune, so it was a time of planting wrong seeds, and it was a moment of bitterness and frustration. Sorry. And then I found God through nature and my passion through nature, and like she said, through hiking, except I don't hike with other people, I hike by myself, because that's when I connect most with God. And I just found the seeds along the way, and I found what I can strengthen and trees I could build and fruit I can produce. And I just found patience and joy and enough peace to get me through those tough years that I had when I was quiet and shy and just felt alone. And it got me through, and I connected to the vine, and it allowed me to grow the fruits that other people could enjoy and spread it through other people.
Have you found that it's tough being kind or gentle, or do you find that God is giving you grace to be some of those things that maybe don't come naturally?
He's given me a lot of grace. I found it as time goes on, it gets like more practice, and it gets easier being kind and more understanding on other people, and it's easier to forgive now.
Well, I've had the privilege of holding the microphone here, and so I've been asking the questions. But I wonder if you guys would allow me to invite the congregation to ask a question or two, if they have any questions about any of the stories or testimonies you've shared. Would that be all right? Any questions that you want to throw at these storytellers this morning? Thank you. Thank you for sharing your story. Yeah, over here. Okay, good question. What advice would you offer to people that are encountering a similar situation? I'll pick on you first, Matt. Someone that maybe a teenager whose parents are struggling, what advice would you give them from your own experience?
Throw away the things that give you anger, and find what you're passionate about, and find what leads you closer to Christ. And find the things that give you joy. And once you find one fruit, I'm pretty sure the rest are sure to follow.
For you, one of those things was being alone out in the natural world.
Yeah.
Okay. Rhoda, a response to that?
someone that's going through similar situations. I just was reflecting back on, there's been various moments of deep confusion, frustration, loneliness, a whole gamut of emotions. Because when you live on planet Earth, no matter whether it's 15 years, 40 years, whatever, we all have moments when we're just in desperation and confusion. For me, I recall many times my fingers were about ready to put the number into the telephone to call a friend to draw them into connection with me. And there was just this awareness of, Rhoda, what are you really going after here? Do you really think that calling that friend is really going to give you what you need? And there's been many times I've just hung the phone back up and acknowledged that, okay, what it is that I really want, and I named it. Was it acceptance? Was it a listening ear? Was it compassion? Someone to empathize with my situation? So if I could name it, and then I would then take that, and it takes time to sift through what it was, because there's layers to our emotions. And then to realize that, you know, God, here I am. This is what I'm experiencing. At the moment, maybe it was loneliness. So if you're really real, I need you to help me deal with this loneliness. What is it that I really want? I want you. I want somebody to love me or whatever. And to realize that I have to take time with him because he's my source. He's my Jesus vine. And just like a plant has to have roots in order to grow and to have that nourishment to sustain it, and especially when it's a dry period, what comfort I really did experience knowing that I could source what I was looking for from him, and to know that his roots are deep into resources that I don't have. And it ended up, oh yes, friends are important, yes. But to really get what I really want, and because sometimes we're like sponges, or should I use the word leeches on other people, where we just suck the life out of them. They go away after having been with us, me, and they go, whew, that was exhausting. And to realize that when I'm needy in that, in whatever way, to recognize what it is I really need and then suck it out of the Jesus vine. And that takes time, and it often takes alone time, closet time. Sometimes that's driving in my car to and from work. Sometimes it's laying awake at night and I haven't fallen asleep, and what's in my head and sifting through my thoughts, and to land on what it is, what's that all about? Does that help?
Any other questions? One or two? Back here, yeah. Dave, that's a good question for you. When you're going through a health crisis, what can you tell us? How do we come around and help a person who is in the midst of a personal crisis?
I think it's got to go both ways. I think from what I learned, in the beginning, everyone is gung-ho and understands that you're going through a crisis and they're there for you. But if it's over a long period of time, I mean, we've come to understand that people have lives, and their lives are busy too, and that they can't always be there for you. I think we need to caution on the side of, even though our lives are busy, we still need to remember the people that are in need. And at a time of need, if they're forgotten, they can lose their ways, and they can become lonely, abandoned, and wondering, where is God in this whole situation? For our situation, I mean, it did happen. Because it was such a long period of time, the church, and I'm not saying that for everybody, but the church in general understood what was going on in our lives, but other things were going on in other people's lives. And we weren't, I learned to understand that I'm not the center of the universe, and that it's not because I was sick that there wasn't other people that were sick at the same time. So I think having a strong support group, which includes small group, and if you're not in a small group, then friends, family who are believers in Christ, to pray for you constantly, to even pick up the phone and say, hey, I need to have a conversation, not to talk about my health, but just a friendly conversation. That can be so refreshing. I know for Sarah, it would have been great if people had just come over to talk to Sarah about Sarah, and not about Dave. And I think that was tough for her because it was all about me, and she was forgotten. So I think people who go through a health crisis or are sick or are struggling with other health issues in the family, that put it out there, get the support from your friends and families, but make sure you support the rest of the family too, and not just the individual that's going through the process, because it's just as hard on them as it is for anyone else. So.
Good answer.
Just another contribution in terms of health crisis and whatnot. I do like to come alongside people that are struggling, and I've spent time just sitting with them. And to realize that the earth suit is one thing. What you live in, the body you live in, it has problems, it gets sick. There's, from a friend perspective, I can't fix my friend's problem. What do I do? But to realize that there's a deeper part to each one of us than just the earth suit. And to be able to just meet them at a more soul level and go there. There's so much there that we can talk about and we can encourage one another about. And it doesn't even, I think it's really important because there's body sickness, but there's also heart sickness as well. And in your soul, the mind, will, and emotion part of a person is what I'm talking about.
One other question. How do we support a teenager who's going through a tough time, not unlike you or Matt? Do you have any suggestions?
Give them positivity and love. Like, don't be like judgmental, and don't be angry, and just give them positivity and love, and be genuine about it.
All right. Well, we want to say thank you to these storytellers this morning who've opened themselves up and been very vulnerable with us. And we are learning lots from this conversation. So let's give these friends a hand to take their seats. So there's lots to be learned from these testimonies this morning. The fruit of the Spirit is just exactly that. It's not us trying harder, trying to reach for something that we don't have, but it comes as we give room for Christ to be formed in us. His character spills out of us. And that fruit is a blessing to others, but we're blessed as well by that fruit, because it's not just growing inside of us, but it's that fruit is within in the church. And so sometimes that fruit is a blessing to others, but we're sustained by that fruit as the whole church gives themselves over to God, and gentleness and kindness and patience and all those things are available to us through the other members of our family. It's a fantastic thing. So we listen to the Spirit, we trust the Spirit, we obey the Spirit of God,
And as we allow him more space in our lives, we'll see these character attributes, these character attributes of God himself taking over our lives. And Paul says, since we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit. And so I say to you this morning, just as we begin to bring this service to a close, what is the Spirit saying to you this morning through his word and through some of these stories? If we live by the Spirit, let us keep in step with the Spirit. And I believe he's speaking today through song, through stories, through his word. What's he whispering to you? The fruit that we're talking about is in fact the fruit of God. It's the fruit of the Spirit. And as we give room for Christ in our lives, we reproduce as well. We produce fruit. And the fruit that we produce, the fruit of a follower of Jesus, our president that I serve, the president of the Evangelical Missionary Church, is fond of reminding us of this. The fruit of a follower of Jesus is another follower of Jesus. And so as we give room for the Spirit of God to birth his character in our lives, this fruit that we've been talking about, that has an impact on those around us. The fruit of a follower of Jesus is another follower of Jesus. We're going to close with a song this morning. I'm going to invite the worship team to come up. And the song is Lay It Down. It's an invitation. And maybe this morning for some of you it'll be more than a song. We want to provide space if you want to physically come as a sign of offering yourself to God and laying down whatever it is that the Spirit of God is speaking to you about this morning. You're welcome to do that. There's a place of prayer here at the front. You're welcome to pray where you are, but maybe for some of you that would just be helpful to visibly take that step forward and lay down whatever you're hanging on to. And you're welcome to do that. And if you need someone to come along and encourage you, speak words of encouragement or pray with you, the elders would be glad to do that as well. But let's sing together.